In the year 1737, in the city of Northampton, Massachusetts, the great divine Jonathan Edwards was delivering his sermon when the balcony of that very full church collapsed, charging all above down upon many worshipers beneath in a riot of smashing wood and painful cries. To the astonishment of everybody, and especially the famous preacher, no one perished. He blogged about it soon afterward. No one can give an account, he wrote. No one can give an account or conceive by what means people's lives and limbs should be thus preserved. It seems unreasonable to ascribe it to anything else but the care of Providence in disposing the motions of every piece of timber and the precise place of safety where everyone should sit and fall. How times have changed, eh? Certainly, it's not uncommon to find people effusing with praise for God for sparing them from calamity of some kind, but for most moderns, the logical mess in this idea is just too plain. If God swoops down to do special saving stunts, twisting the natural order, disposing the motion of every timber for his purposes, but leaves the ordinary function of the natural world to its own purposes like a clock unwinding, well, then God is implicated in every disaster. God is picking and choosing according to that worldview just how hard to hurt and destroy those of his children he has some beef with. That theory, which is called special providence, is a moral and theological swamp that God himself seems to founder and drown under its mud. And yet it's where much of the mind of humanity has been disposed for thousands of years. In the 18th century, in the West, at any rate, a rift between science and religion opened like an earthquake dividing a city. Science-minded men like Thomas Paine and Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, so much for the Christian nation, they just abandoned church teachings. Some religionists reacted with equal vehemence against science. Both camps regarded the other's point of view as invalid. You could call them mutual rejectors. Jonathan Edwards took a different approach. He did not disdain, in fact, he even devoured the works of Isaac Newton and others, stayed nevertheless in the certainty that the one truth revealed by God was in Christ and through the gospel. Jonathan Edwards and his kind of religionist always and only absorbed the witnesses of science within the framework of the Bible. We might call them absorbers. They absorbed science, or wished to anyway. The last few generations of the Western development of religious mind have produced a third approach, adaptation. Adapters throw open the shutters to science. When assertions of the Bible fail to fit the results of scientific inquiry, adapters shift their interpretation of the biblical word. It becomes bigger in some ways, perhaps. Today, we live in a jumble of rejectors, absorbers, and adapters. Do you know which way you incline? I believe that God's word invites you to step faithfully into the practice of adapting your knowledge of God with everything that you can learn and that is being learned according to the key of knowledge. Today we heard that Jesus cried, "Woe to you, lawyers." And I'm sure that woke a few of you up. "Woe to you, lawyers, for taking away the key of knowledge." Well, what is the key of knowledge? And how is it that lawyers grabbed it? I'd like you to take a little linguistic walk with me. In Latin, the word for knowledge is scientia, science. You know, we get conscience and science and all that set of words from it. It actually has a root shared with the word scissors, scissors and science. And the word at the root is to separate. Science is a separating process. It's like seeing a figure against a ground. That's a separating process. In fact, if what is an object is not separated from a ground, then it has no separation. In fact, it cannot be known. So to see something, to discern it, to distinguish it, to know it, all these ideas are contained in the concept of science. To inquire into the nature of things in this discerning manner implies something deeper. Implies the exercise of an authority within yourself to ask what it is you see and to tell what it is you see. That's the full circuit of science. Not just to have the knowledge, but to talk about it. In fact, the religious communities all over the world, you could say that they invented the scientific method of seeking to know and then speaking in community about the methods, the practices that bring knowledge and learning from others. This is the process of science. I've often said that good science and good faith share a behavior, which is both refuse to decide when to stop asking questions. And bad science and bad religion share the opposite behavior. Both stop asking questions whenever it suits them. And then they take away the key of knowledge. That's how it's done. In the general crowd, they teach that the authorities know best, thank you. That you have no reason to worry, thank you. That you have no authority to ask, get out of my way. No more questions, no more questions. And they leave the press room. Those upon whom Jesus pronounces woe are not advocates and adversaries in court processes. It's just not that scene. Rather, the lawyers, those on whom Jesus pronounces woe, are those who use fear and base desires to shape what people believe is really so in this world. Who are those manipulators today? They are legion, politicians, news media, military and financial powerhouses, movies, advertisers, and more than a few religious leaders. As we saw last week, Jesus did not think that people in crowds could learn anything. And we had yet another statement of that in today's reading. There's a point here. In crowds is how manipulators do their work. In crowds, manipulators take away the key of knowledge. Ordinary religion's love of bigness, Jesus disdains. He turns away from it. He would rather speak with a few. Are you with him? He says first, beware of the manipulators. That is their hypocrisy. And then he reaches for the vision that he hopes and holds for anyone who has ears to hear and eyes to see. He says, receive the key of knowledge. Nothing hidden will remain covered. No secrets will fail to become known. Things known dimly by a few will be shared in the light for all, and what only a few have whispered to one another will now be proclaimed to the whole world. This is the horizon of freedom without any manipulation. It has consequences for politics, for economics, for science, for psyche, for spirit. And yet religion has tended to squash Jesus off here in a corner as if he's only about personal faith, whatever that means. How different is his sunrise? Now, I'm not suggesting that Jesus was asking his disciples to wake up to the questions of science or democracy as we have come to know them in the last hundreds of years. But I would propose this. It's a hypothesis. Try it out. Through its roots in Judaism and Greek wisdom, the Jesus tradition has destined the cultures that try to embrace it to open the mind in freedom, has destined those cultures to become more and more open. I am suggesting that Jesus is calling upon all who would hear him to accept the authority and the risks and the power of free inquiry. I am suggesting that while ordinary church religion, along with all the lawyers of manipulation, resist the opening of the mind, the Spirit of Jesus Christ eternally requires that you take the key of knowledge, of free inquiry, that you use it, and that you guard it, that no one take it from you. This is the practice at the heart of good faith. I find it thrilling to explore what the sciences report in ways that I can understand at any rate. Those works of Paul Davies and Brian Greene that have been so popular. Hawking's, I can't understand. But explorations of quantum theory, of medicine, of evolution, to delve into some of the particulars now would take us far beyond the hour. We can't do it. We might better invite women and men of science to forums here in the church that we may see what they see, and do so within a context where our own faith might open. Still, you might ask this question. So what if time and space, according to quantum theories, are not like what we think they are? So what if we came from this kind of creature or that? What does it matter? We do not live at that level or back in that time. We have to make our choices in our ordinary bodies and minds now. What's the point of all that science? I would have you consider this. Before the telescopes and the microscopes of the scientists were perfected, that goes back some ways now, every tribe and culture and continent on Earth saw all truth through its own philosophies, its own myths, but it didn't even regard them as its own. It held what it thought to be true as the only way to see. Earth was assumed to be the center of the universe. Man, not woman, not yet, was assumed to be the purpose of the universe. But looking through glasses, better and better, stronger and stronger, forced humanity, in the West at least, to take a lower seat at the cosmic table. Now we see that the center is not our land, it's not our Earth, it's not our solar system, it's not our galaxy, it's not even maybe our universe. We stand at the center of nothing, and yet we're standing. There is this witnessing going on, this mystery of seeing. We who are bold to acknowledge no ideological foundation underneath us, privileging our way of seeing, we're not crushed. This is a remarkable thing. As the sciences continue to make their reports through the centuries, we have let go of mechanical ideas of God, a God who really served us with the napkin over the arm. What may I do for you now? We have been uncertain what would replace that God when we let him go. And yet, we were nevertheless attentive and open and waiting for a God we have not yet known to respond to that empty space. This is what the traditions have called the via negativa. We've talked about that once or twice. Friends, this is good faith, to enter like that into the questions that science opens. It's not just sort of like faith. It's absolute faith, deeper than the depths of sea or space, to wonder and to keep with wondering. I call that walking with Jesus. And look a little further. While scientists were peering at everything over the last century since Einstein's discovery of the theories of relativity, have not many, many white people in powerful positions across the earth realized that they are not at the center of the universe, that they are not masters of anything, that indeed they can be welcomed by a world of color when and if the scales fall from our eyes? And in this same time, this same astounding century passed, we men began to see that women are not our women, that we are equals and in some ways each stronger than the other. The shadow side of femininity appears more and more for men. The masculine side of femininity appears more and more for women. The voice of love that could not speak its name has sounded in legislatures and, had we not heard this, in the federal courts last week. It is no longer hidden. Nothing that is hidden shall remain that way, Jesus says. Like the scientists committed to the same principles as the scientists, we have seen that there is not just one way, not just one creation, not even just one time. Tragically, through this same century, our Mother Earth has suffered immeasurably from our insatiable self-interest, which has been accelerated by discoveries of science, which tells us something about the key of knowledge, the need for wisdom in its application. Now Earth is making herself heard. Jesus says, nothing is covered up that will not be uncovered. There is nothing secret that will not become known. What is next? Will the rich see the poor? Friends, a Christian must never tire of seeing the gift of Jesus' teaching in the practice of science. It looks like this. Jesus' teaching is crucifixion, resurrection. All the other teachings are just versions of that. That is his teaching. Take up your cross. Lose your life that you may have it. Surrender, surrender, so that you may receive what you cannot conceive. That is what scientific inquiry also does. There's a kind of surrender, is there not, in asking a question to which you have no answer. Really seriously asking openly again and again. This spirit is spread widely now through our culture. Not always well. But I call on you to be confident that in your call to be Christian and in your witness to the way our world is willing to open free inquiry, there is one God at work. The key of knowledge, the spirit of inquiry and freedom, the uncovering of what has lain hidden, the sharing of power, the sharing of creativity, the celebration of justice, these are all signs of one action of the divine. They are all names of God. everything is one. Let us affirm that with song.